So I'll talk now about working with impermanence in our mind, our thoughts, our emotions, and a little bit of how that has a great deal of application to our life. So this is what Thich Nhat Hanh says about impermanence being our real spiritual ally. If you suffer, it's not because things are impermanent. It's because you believe things are permanent. When a flower dies, you don't suffer much because you understand that flowers are impermanent. But you cannot accept the impermanence of your beloved. If you look deeply into impermanence, you will best do your best to make her happy right now. Aware of impermanence, you become positive, loving, and wise. Impermanence is good news. Without impermanence, nothing would be possible. With impermanence, every door is open for change. Impermanence is an instrument for our liberation. So the rubber really meets the road in terms of impermanence being our instrument for liberation when we start to notice it's really our thoughts and emotions that are impermanent, in the same way that the sound of that jet is, you know, pulsing slightly, waxing and waning just a little bit, decreasing, still changing, still there but different, right, than when we first heard it? Louder? Still there? Gone. Not back. Gone. That's the way it goes, right? With our emotions. It's a long wait. Oh, it's gone. Oh, it's back. It's gone. Please let it be gone. Come on! The pilot knows, right? That's my main teacher, Joseph Goldstein, up there. He's circling back around. You don't get off the hook that easily. That's just totally how it is. So let's listen again. Just flow. As it's happening, it's just flow. So, you may have noticed that your thoughts and emotions actually come and go, you know, relatively quickly, especially the thoughts. I mean, thoughts are going like this. They're just really just flow all the time. I mean, it's an interesting emotion, you know. The whole world is, word is motion, however many letters, seven letters, and then E on the front of it. So, I don't know what the E is for. But it's emotion is motion. And it will move if we are not in reaction or resistance to it. It's energy that wants to move. And we plug it up and dam it up and build big, difficult, you know, castles out of it when we're in some kind of resistance, some kind of not liking, or some kind of building it up into something bigger than it is. But when we don't do that, our thoughts come and go pretty darn quickly, much more than that jet. You're there just slightly. You're completely out of reaction to an emotion that you're in when you don't care if it lasts or stays. So, I mean, truthfully, I really was wanting that jet noise to go because I know how much I want to cover and there's not going to be time. So, you know, I was in some kind of resistance. But when we drop our guard and we just instead show up as the kind attention, this kind witnessing presence, then our emotions tend to take care of themselves. I say tend, they don't always, but they tend to. It is what it is. Nothing but flow. Oh yeah. They haven't really had any exercises until now. So the Buddha said if you're going to be attached anywhere, attach more to your body because it's sort of like here more. You may notice this, that you can have an emotion and you can get through the thoughts of it, but the charge of it is still in you. And it's still in you as energy and sensation, even though you've kind of let go of the thoughts. So, you know, it's interesting that actually our thoughts are really quite fleeting when we don't get too involved. He compared our thought, what's called mind, intellect, or consciousness by day and by night arises as one thing and ceases as another. Just as a monkey swinging through a forest wilderness grabs a branch, letting go of it, it grabs another branch, letting go of that, it grabs another one, letting go of that, it grabs another one. In the same way, what's called mind, intellect, or consciousness by day and by night arises as one thing and ceases as another. So, have you seen this? I mean, even just a little glimpse that, like, oh, right, my thoughts, they are like one monkey. You know, we have a thought, we have another thought, we have another thought. And when we link our thoughts, it's called thinking. But we can just have thoughts that come up and don't go anywhere, that just arise and desist. That's because we're not attached. And when I say not attached, I mean aware. When we're just simply aware of our mind, our thoughts don't go anywhere. They arise, but it's just not the monkey going endlessly through the jungle. It's just like a thought. And then the sound might be the next thing, and sensation might be the next thing. And there's tremendous joy and freedom that comes when we start experiencing ourselves this way. But it's very hard to do because we are so attached to our thoughts. We identify with our thoughts probably much more than we do with our body. Well, I get it that my body comes and goes, and my body, you know, made up its own mind how tall it was going to be and at what age my hair would grow. I can get that, you know, but my thoughts are me. My emotions are me. That's me. Don't take that away from me. And it doesn't get taken away from you. The only thing that gets taken away is me. The emotions stay, actually. They don't belong to anybody. They're just happening. But we're so attached to our thoughts that we're blinded to their impermanent nature. If you start seeing your thoughts as flow, that's such a big deal. And every now and then you might want to be the monkey that grabs the branch. Like, this one's important. I'm gonna act on this one. But the rest, boop, 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 boop. Come and go, come and go, come and go. Here's just a little cartoon. So we probably all know the people like this man in this cartoon where we're very attached to our thoughts. And so I'll pass this around. It's a a man and a woman at the door, and they've been on a date, and the woman's opening the door, and she's saying to the guy, "I'd love to ask you in, Howard, but I need some time to digest everything you told me about the Ottoman Empire." You know how that first date went. You're nervous, you're a professor of whatever, or maybe you're just an autodidact, and you go out on a date, and you just can't help yourself, but you go on an hour lecture about the Ottoman Empire. That's being attached to our thoughts. Some of you have talked about in discussions that as you start to realize more and more how it's all changing, it's unsettling. And it is. It is unsettling to watch your thoughts come and go like this. And literally that you can have thoughts, you know, let me just prime you a little bit. Just have a thought about elementary school. Yeah, I mean, wherever you went, did anyone like have a surprising thought when you went to elementary school? Or was it your kind of usual thought when you think of elementary school? A little surprising?
Yeah.
When you start watching your thoughts, they will surprise you. If they didn't that time, eventually you'll start noticing, oh my gosh, you know, I thought of a loaf of bread, you know, because we had the cornbread for, you know, lunch, and then that reminds me, this is me, of being a kid in Iran. My father was in the pipeline business, and we were based in Iran for 6 years of my childhood, and we had this incredibly good bread, you know. Now I think of our cars. We had these Ford Mercury, I believe, or Ford LTDs, and I have no idea why, but for as a child, this meant so much to me. We had two, and my mom had hers, and the headlights, the detail around the headlight was rounded, and the detail around my dad's headlight was square. And that was like male and female, and I was like imprinted on that. Like, but I haven't thought about that in a very long time. So the mind can go anywhere, anytime. And the only thing that stops it from doing that is that we fixate and we lock on. And we do this willful thing of taking our thoughts down a path. And it's great and cool that we can do that. Like, let's be clear, this is really cool, isn't it? That we can do this, that we can actually symbolize the world and approximate the world and then take action and have it, you know, kind of work out. That it works out at all just based on our thoughts is amazing. So this isn't bad. It's miraculous. It's awesome. I'm a former scientist. Thinking is awesome. I love to think. And if you do, don't be embarrassed about that, because it does a lot of good. So thoughts are great when we're aware of them and we're using them instead of them using us. So thoughts are a great servant, but not a very good master. Because when they're in control, we're unconscious and it's just the same patterns running us. And so here's some really good news about the impermanence of thoughts. It's true. Well, let me just stop there. Think of a country. Any country at all. Maybe think of a country you've been to. And really let yourself go there. Like, where do you put yourself? What are the sights, the sounds, maybe the smells in the scene you're in? If you've never been out of the country, just, you know, picture a different state. Okay, now, if you would, think of a country you've never been to. Any country at all. And just, what's your imagining of it? Okay? So, while you were in the one country that you've been to, where were all the other countries? 200-something countries. They didn't exist. When you left the country you've been to and went to the one you've never been to, what happened to the country you've been to? Stopped existing. This is our thought world. It's not the real world. It's the thought world. And so this is awesome. A thought, if a thought ever could be true, and they can't, but if they ever could be true, they're only true while you're thinking them. Because they are just thought worlds. They're not the real world. So Iran exists in my thoughts if I think of Iran. If I think of Afghanistan, Iran is gone. This is powerful to get. It's especially true if we have thoughts about things we don't like, about others, about ourselves. They're only true when we're thinking them. If you think you're unworthy in some way, we all have doses of that, it's only true while you're thinking it. The minute you're like enjoying a flower or a breath or a glass of iced tea, you're not unworthy. It's just a thought. It's so cool to get this. It's just a thought. And the ones that come back repeatedly are thoughts we're really strongly identified with. The more they come back, the more identified we are. It's not that the thought is true just because we've had it 10,000 times. It's just that we're strongly attached and identified to that particular story. That's why it comes back 10,000 times. So, as you keep practicing, if you're not seeing this already, you'll start seeing it, and it's liberating. I thought that was a hearing aid, but it's a swing. So, let's do another little exercise. Bring to mind somebody that you felt a little peeved towards lately. Irritated, annoyed, not like full on really mad, but just something, some situation where you felt irritated, annoyed. Okay, now here's a trick. As always, allow it without judging, but see what it's like. Notice that there's an image, maybe a thought, and maybe a feeling of irritation as sensation. So now, ask yourself, who are you irritated at? I guess to be grammatical, at whom are you irritated? What are you irritated at? You're irritated at a thought. It's just a thought. That situation is gone. It's over. The only way it exists anymore is in your thought world. So this is also a really cool thing to get, that someone does something once and we replay it 119 times. So do the math, right? They did it once. It's over, but it's in our thought world. And there's something about it that impacted us so much that we keep replaying it. So this is in no way to judge that or deny that. It's usually there's something important under that thought that makes it keep replaying. So So, but what this does is it helps us reclaim our own power. They did it once, I did 120 times. You know, where's the suffering? It's mostly in here. So if I take care of in here, I can, the more I take care of the 120 times, the easier it will be to deal with the one time, like actually, you know, maybe engage the person on the one time. But, so it's powerful to get that our thoughts are true only while they're happening, and that most of our suffering is self-created because we keep replaying painful situations. And that's a kind of empowerment to really get that, that, oh, it's here. So what's in it for me? What is there for me to learn from the situation? And also, what is the universe asking me to accommodate in my own heart? If it's hurt feelings, then that's what I need to say yes to, of course, to. If it's irritation, if it's anger, whatever the mind state, if with mindfulness I can be with it in the way we're doing this retreat, I am making room for it. I'm accommodating and maybe even, you know, appreciating my pain. It's mine. If what's wrong with this statement? You make me so angry. Nobody makes you angry. A person is bumbling along in their unskillful, maybe, way, or maybe even aggressive way, and we get angry as our response. It's ours. And our practice shows us this again and again. It's my anger. The action is theirs. My response is mine. And again, this is not to turn all of us into doormats. Oh, it's all good. Whatever anyone does, I'm, you know, I meditate now. You know, that's just going to backfire. Doormats don't feel empathy, compassion, anything. Doormats just are stomped on. So this is not about that. This is the opposite. It's empowering us to get it where we can make a difference. If they did it once and we do it 120 times, we can make the most difference right here in our heart. We might be able to work with the other person, but we can work with our hearts. So, this is kind of impermanence in our thinking and how liberating it starts to become. So, now just to talk about applying it to life. So, we're seeing this change on a micro level in our bodies, sounds, sensations, thoughts. How does that help us in our life in the macro level? And so one way is that it, as we orient to impermanence and we get that this is just so how it is, we start seeing it everywhere. Life makes sense. Oh, right. Everything. The leaves out there on the little oaks, you know, turning yellow. The wind rustling the leaves. It's all flowing. And the more we relate to life as flow, the more, ironically, the less we're thrown around by life. So there's a very famous story about Ajahn Chah, who's I've quoted a bunch of times, where he came to IMS, Insight Meditation Society, in Massachusetts, and he was in the library there, and there were some students around him, and I'm not even sure what the question was, but this was the answer. So he said, "Do you see this glass?" And he holds up a glass of water. He said, "I love this glass. It holds the water admirably. When the sun shines on it, it reflects the light beautifully. When I tap it, it has a lovely ring. Yet for me, this glass is already broken. When the wind knocks it over or my elbow knocks it off the shelf and it falls to the ground and shatters, I say, Of course. But when I understand that this glass is already broken, every minute with it is precious. My wife's a writer, and she says, you know, I write, dabble in poetry here and there, and she basically says, never use the word poignant in poetry. Because it's such a cliche, I guess. But it's poignant. It's poignant to get this. That this is not, he's not saying this to make us sad. He's saying this to help us appreciate how precious it all is. It's already broken. So when it does break, we just go, yeah, mm-hmm. That's the nature of a glass eventually. So I'm going to totally relate to it as a precious thing while I have it. We all know this, right? The sunset is so precious. We don't think of the whole day as precious because we have it the whole day. It's that little moment of sunset that's precious. So we start looking at life this way. It's all so dear, all so precious because it's all so flowing. So we start to see and appreciate beauty and preciousness. It moves us so much. I mean, I've literally, thinking of that movie, A River Runs Through It, I've just had tears streaming down of this old man who suffered so much, who's just communing with nature and this fly rod in this vast landscape. Like, I don't know why that's so powerful. I hope maybe it's has some of that power for you, that it's so poignant. and precious and beautiful life. So this is one thing we take off our cushion. Another thing we take off our cushion is we relate to pleasure so much more freely because we know it's already broken. So William Blake will say it better than I could say it. This is how a wise person relates to pleasure. He who binds himself to joy does the winged life destroy. But he who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. That is wisdom. Kiss the joy as it flies. That's how we relate to joy. And David was asking about, is this like dancing? You know, yes. We kiss the joy as it flies. So we take that off the cushion of wisdom about pleasure. But we enjoy it. We kiss it. We're not just like, oh, whatever. I'm meditating. I'm a meditator. It's not going to work. You know, we get actually more joyful. Because if we're attached to the joy, we're afraid of it ending. And that crimps our style. If we're really open-hearted, the joy comes in very deep. And we get, what's the word, uplifted by it. You don't see the Dalai Lama, oh, whatever. It's all good, you know. Dukkha. Joy, whatever, right? He's joyful. That guy is joyful. He will break out in a laugh so fast, you know, and he'll get really sad so fast because his heart's so open. So change also makes us humble. I'll read a poem all about hubris. The opposite, right? This is from Shelley, 1818. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage face lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well his passions read. And on the pedestal, these words appear, My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair, and all that's left is this shattered statue. We need to get our hubris. None of us are like that, but we have our own specialties, don't we? Of maybe not being too humble. You know, it's just not wise. It's not bad. It's just not wise. If you are that person, you are going to get cut off at the knees eventually. Life will do it, and it will be impermanence that does it. And so, to be out of harmony of the truth of impermanence is true misery. To be in harmony is true happiness. Impermanence orients us less to results and more to process. Because the results we only get every now and then. Drew Brees maybe will only win the Super Bowl once in his life. Not to cast aspersions on Drew at all, but we our successes that we work so hard for, if we're only living for the result, we sometimes have to wait a very long time. But if we show up for the process, we have it all the time. So here's what Helen Mirren, the actress, says when she was up for the Oscar for The Queen. She won the Oscar, but before she won it, she said, win or lose, the bubble bursts and you're back to the nitty-gritty. Someone had asked her about, you know, is she excited about winning? You know, like, she's nominated. What if you win, you know? So this is her answer. Win or lose, the bubble bursts and you're back to the nitty-gritty of working. I'm honestly at my happiest in a cold rehearsal room with my polystyrene cup of tea. So you gotta love the process. Life's a journey, not a destination, blah, blah, blah. And your life is nothing but process. So one more lesson for our lives. So this could be kind of a smart aleck answer when somebody loves you. When somebody asks you, what do you love about your partner? You could say, got that wrong. Never mind. I was trying to get there. When Jack Kornfield, when people ask him, what do? He says, when. I was trying to apply that to your partner. What I was trying to get at is, what do you love about your partner? Your answer could be when. Yeah. It's like, you know, your partner is coming and going. If you have a partner. If you don't have a partner, you know, everything else is coming and going. And then you get a partner, and then she or he is coming and going. So it's all the same. The universe is asking us to love our partner as flow, as opposed to this fixed idea that we think they are. So a commitment to a person is a commitment to grow together. Not like, I'm committed to you as you are now, you know. That's not it, right? That's not going to work. The commitment is to flow and grow together. And then we don't have to be the person who says, I didn't change, you changed. It's your fault. And you know, that's really common to hear in couples that split up. That's really not what we sign up for if we're really committed for life. Right? We're signing up for change. Relationships are hard, aren't they? Just a few more cartoons. I just think it's always good to have humor on retreat because... So here's a relationship cartoon. Guy's in a full lotus and his spouse is saying to him angrily, can you be in the moment later? This is not at all related, but it's just a funny cartoon. Buddhist compliments. A student is kind of like doing gusho to his Zen master. And the Zen master is saying, I've never met anyone so thoughtless in my life. Keep up the good work. Thank you, master. Buddhist compliments. Again, just random humor now. Mm-hmm. This is a classic old one. I shouldn't. The bear is at the restaurant. I shouldn't, but I'm going to have the garbage. Pointing at the menu.
In keeping with the Ozymandias and impermanence,
yes.
There's a great visual poem at the second set of steps down here. There's a plaque, just like the one here. And the last line of those plaques says, it's a record of permanent achievement. To the structure. And on the side of that stairwell leading up to that placard is some chalk scrawling. And there are several chalk hearts with so-and-so left so-and-so. And another one says, I was here, M.M. It's just beautiful.
What strikes you about that?
It's all permanent.
Yeah.
And one is graven very solemnly by
Got
the
it.
Government.
Yes.
And the other by a child with a piece of chalk and
right.
concrete.
Got it.
And they're the same.
Got it.
Of course.
Yeah.
And thanks for the idea that she's already broken.
Yeah, and so are you, man. So remember it from last night in the river runs through it. We can love something completely that we don't understand completely. And some of you are saying, talking about that and saying, well, I don't even understand myself completely, so how could I understand my sweetie completely? Of course we can. We don't have to. We can kiss the joy as it flies. Witness the unfolding of our partner right in front of us and see them as, you know, just like we are, as a river of many, many different things. If you love your sweetie, what is it about them that you love, right? It's not everything unless it's complete unconditional love, which is rare, right? We love some parts, we don't love others. Our sweeties are complex and changeable. And it's the whole package that we're relating to. And our Dharma practice helps us so much with relating to that. Because we don't have to characterize our partner with the one thing we don't like about them. That's not who they are. That's just one thing we don't like, period. It's not who they are. Because there are many things at different times. So notice when you do that. Notice when you take the one thing you don't like and assign it to their being. Oh, she's so this, he's so that. Well, that's not exactly right. It's a part of them that doesn't work for you. But it's not all of them. And so don't define a person by what you don't like about them. Okay. I just want to then sort of come back now. I've already gone out into your lives, of course. I just want to come back very quickly and just touch base with the practice and I think that's relevant to record. Well, I'll just record it. I've directed you in a very specific way of practicing that might be different than you've done before. It's even a very specific way of practicing within Vipassana. This wouldn't be the typical kind of retreat instruction you'd get where you really take up something like change and that's your theme. But so the question, you know, might come up for you, well, you know, how do I take this practice of doing this retreat into life? And, you know, it'd be just fine to just kind of go back to whatever your normal practice is and then just tune into this at times. If for some reason the practice this weekend was confusing or it got you up into your head a lot, thinking a lot, it might not be the best practice for you to do all the time. So then just do that maybe at times. Take some, if you're sitting 3 or 4 times a week, maybe for, 10 minutes in one of your sitting periods, take up change and just come back to this open awareness where it's, you're not really identifying anything except whether it's changing or staying the same. Now, so that's if you didn't really connect this way. If you really did connect, then just go for it. I mean, that's easy. And remembering that when your attention is more wide open, be on the lookout for. Sometimes when you do that, it can get a little bit sort of dreamy and spacey and sort of like you're just kind of in a nice state, but you're not registering very much. That's how this more spacious approach can sort of veer off. We can go from a relaxed to, somewhat asleep. So if you notice that happening, then either come back to breath and narrow your focus, or just start doing a lot of noting. The noting really helps you not space out when you're being more spacious. And then if you're noticing change very quickly and the noting seems too slow and cumbersome, just completely drop it. There's no need for it. So I think that's clear, right? And does anyone need any clarification about how to take this practice with you? Okay. So great. So we'll stop there for now.